This is Rob Petrozzo from Rally, and I am panicked about Howard Lindzen getting into the NFT market.
You
look at me. How bad? I feel bad. Look bad.
You don't look as bad as you say you feel.
I feel like I weigh one. I'm a little heavy right now. I got to lose 10 pounds before I bike next month. It's going backwards because I put on a lot. Last night I had a milkshake. I had the thin versions. The chocolate peanut butter one. They got 9,000 different packages now for Reese's peanut butter cups. So it's a big deal. They give me a thin one, so I have 8.
Wow.
That's the equivalent of 2 fat ones. Like in the end, I ate the same amount. Fucking killing me. So are we on?
We are on, yes. Yeah.
Alrighty. I was just trimming nose hair. Do I look all right?
I can't see any from
here.
By the
way, I have a manscape. I just pull them. Just wakes me up. Listen, Ashton Kutcher's not bathing his kids. Did you bathe the little guys?
Only when I needed to.
Was that a thing for Norwegian?
No, I don't know. Bathe them all the time. Dan, what's wrong with that?
I don't know about that. I got a rashless rash. I know I've talked about it here, but it's fucking like a cat. I can't stop. And it's not from any like problem. It is literally from the sun. I know we've talked about it. Is oh my god! It, like back pain's the worst. This thing, I haven't slept in like 4 days. I just keep waking myself up like scratching.
Oh man, that's bad.
Anyways, all right. I'm glad that. Thanks for everybody tuning in. This is Howard Lindzen. Panic with Howard. No friend today. We got a good friend who is in New York, and he's excited about New York. You know, I don't know what he's panicked about. I'm sure I'll listen. But he's one of the founders of one of my favorite companies or brands or things that I get to play with called Rally Road. And it's close to home, too, because my daughter, of all the places she could have worked as a graduate at U of A, I almost said ASU.
Wow.
By the way, yeah, ASU, same state. And graduated UNA, she chose to work at Rally. She was an intern there, and now she's living in the big city.
Very nice.
Yeah,
good
Max
for her.
Max is going to Vegas. How cool is that? He has this plan.
For how long?
Exactly. Huh. He has this plan that's, I don't think he understands how corrupt, like how hard it's going to be for him to go to school there. Or maybe he does, and I'm the idiot. But I'm moving the Maxter there.
Time will show.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on Twitter because I think that would increase my followers if him and I played out 4 years in Vegas on Twitter. Will you have a word with him?
Yeah, I will after just, this.
He has to tweet every time he Venmos me for money, something profound. All right, so it's Rob Petrozzo, who I met, I don't know, it was one of our first investments in Fund 3, and it was part of my thesis around fractional investing. I'm not a car collector. I don't collect anything. Except
watches.
I do a little bit. And now we've got Watchbox, so I'm excited to be an investor there. But yeah, good point. And they do have watches on Rally. Good point. Now I collect cars, seems like. Cause
yes.
For when I moved to Coronado, I had one, and now I have 5.
Oh, really?
Not me personally, but the fam. Right. And my dog. So Rally Road is it's Rally now, sorry. It's they dropped the road because it's collectibles of everything. And it's so funny that when we invested, and we'll talk about this today, it was like, what? Huh? NFT? What? If someone had said NFT in 2016, I don't know, Rob will remember when we invested, 18, I would have said, please, stop. And here we are today, and Rally's going to do a CryptoPunk. So I don't even, Rachel's helping with that. I don't even understand this stuff, Knut. And why I liked it was that I liked the idea that it was SEC, they were going through the S-1 process, like legal. But, you know, the Wild West is scary, and therefore, but here we are 4 years later, and bring on the Wild West. So I want to hear what Rob's thinking about the Wild West and investor behavior and catch up on the very popular app, Rally Road. We had Greg Bettinelli on, and Greg was talking about GOAT, and Greg was also an investor in Rally Road. So I'm the dumb guy in this company, meaning I invested for different reasons than everybody else, but I love collecting stuff on the app, and so do tens of thousands of people. So let's get Rob on the phone.
You got it.
Robbie.
Yo, what's up, my friends? How is life?
Life is good. Did people call you Robbie as a kid?
Nah, people that didn't like me call me Robbie, or people that were being like facetious still tend to call me Robbie, but that never really stuck. And never, like, Howie seemed like an easier one than Robbie. You know,
Howie was easy. I kind of now think it's like a young version. When people say Howie, it's like, oh, it's an ode to the day. My nickname was H.
H is pretty good.
Fucking love H. And it's just fun because if I go back to Toronto, I'll hear that yelled in the street. Whereas if I do that in Soho, they go, hey, fuck nut. Thanks for that trade idea on Stock Twits. My hometown, yeah, nobody follows me. It's still that. H. Did you have a nickname? Was your nickname R?
I had nothing, man. There was, my dad was Robert, so I was always trying to be Rob. But Bob never really stuck either. So it's always been like Rob or I get random curses in the street too, but for different reasons.
You met Rob Siegel, my best buddy, and he's in Toronto. And yeah, I think we all called him Rob. There was no Robert. There was no Ray Ray. There was no Robbie. And so, yeah, I only know it as Rob. So, good. I'm following the Rob rules. Just quick background on because I'm forgetting dates. Rally, just quick. Let's talk about
it. Yeah, so concept was me, Chris, and Max, my two partners and co-founders in 2015. Chris really understood the classic car market, but it was something that was really underrepresented when it came to the people who cared about it most and the people that were the most enthusiastic. So it was like, can we create a world where all these collectibles that people care about are investable? And you could do it without minimums and without commission and take kind of what Robinhood had started, what Coinbase kind of perfected on their side, and do it for alternative assets. And now 6 years later, five and a half years later, it's, like you said, a few hundred thousand users at this point, a ton of different asset classes, probably 15 different categories, everything from the classic cars that we started with to dinosaur fossils and crypto punks and a meteorite that goes live in like a week. And it's just all these things that people care about that have great history of returns, but haven't been accessible to anybody but a small group. Doing all that within an app has always been the goal. And we're getting much closer to that world where everything is investable. As you know, we're trying to be at the forefront of that.
Oh, you know, I've been involved in, I think I work pretty hard around Rally. Do I or no? Like, what do you think
as an
investor?
No question. I mean, it's also like...
Like, I don't work hard. I'm not like digging ditches, but like, I feel like...
close. Sometimes close. If we need to dig a ditch, I feel like I could call you.
Yeah. No, of course. But I feel like I've put this one on my back, not for on your sake, just on my personal back, because it's so weird. Like Robinhood, I talk about, but never had to do anything. Yeah, I helped send, I don't know, 5,000 or so starter accounts to people. I was early beta helping people get onboarded and promoting. Rally, I promote as hard, if not more, but like there you have it. You guys are crushing it. It's only, what's Robinhood, 20-something million accounts, and Rally, you know, hundreds of thousands of accounts. Is it just time? Obviously, it's the size of the market. So it's hard for you to see all this. It's hard for me when I see Stock Twits versus Reddit or Twitter or Discord. So has to be hard for you when you go, oh, we're so close, but we're not at that type of velocity or scale. So how do you tamper that with like just sticking with the plan, which is, you know, you got to pick good assets, got to do good deals. How do you see what's going on, the FOMO and the craziness and the day-to-day of picking one item at a time?
Yeah, I mean, it's the zoom out situation. I think for us, like, we always want to move way quicker and we always want to put way more out. But that being said, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, you look 100 years back, collectibles as an investment needed to catch before we caught too. So we were trying to, you know, prove these two things where alternative assets would be a viable part of every portfolio and it'd be part of a retail portfolio. And that Rally would be the most trusted place to do it. We're starting to hit both of those right now. But we look back and you think about, you know the history of the markets and you know how this whole thing works. In the 30s and 40s, stocks were like too risky for pension plans. And then
I mean, it was a tough, yeah, it was, yeah, a
when,
tough
when you 20s. When you were 26 in 1930,
I can't
obviously.
I tell you, I had and a cloth then, bag.
But you were actually around, like, you know, when everything was all bonds and then they start to integrate stocks. But then, you know, REITs were too risky. And now 2001, it gets added to the S&P and now it makes up 3% of the total index. So it's like, we know, and everyone knows what crypto's done since 2017. That was the riskiest thing ever, and now it's everywhere. Yeah. Collectibles are the right now, and you have the big money looking for the best in class and finding their way back into these kind of historic rarities. So it's kind of like the time right now for crypto.
It's the fucking moment. The key is you better stay in shape, dude, because I'm old. Like, I can't help. You're going right to voicemail. You call me, you get a Chinese doppelganger, Howard, who has a weird accent. but they put you in the wrong trend by mistake because it's China. It's like, yeah.
But it's, you saw, like, what Robinhood hit on was democratizing this space when the whole world was really ready for it and they became that player. I think
they nailed the timing. They didn't know, like, it was the moment.
They nailed it. And we're at a point now, like, we were lucky enough to build a great product and have it live for 3 or 4 years with a really robust community that cared about what we did, build trust, and then hit on this moment right now, which is everybody wanting to understand and get involved in collectibles, and the on-ramp now exists at Rally.
Yeah, I have the luxury, well, at StockTwits, I was miserable for as many years as I was running it, but I, you know, at some point, if I get asked the right question, it's because I saw the speed of everything around me, and I don't know how to code or anything, or I know how to yell. I think I'm top 1% yelling. Knut?
You're really good at that.
Yeah, top 1%, but that doesn't build companies. Or code. Yell, you can't code yell. So now I have the benefit of having multiple hundreds of companies through fund-to-funds and my own investment. So it's slow kids and fast kids. And there's timing. Yeah. There's companies that are hit the right. I try and coach people. It's like, hey, man, you can't. The curve is the curve. You can speed it up.
But being early to that party and seeing around that turn is a really important part of building anything.
Yeah, so like you're really in important. It. Like, it's fun for me to watch because I'm like, okay, like it's, yeah, crypto's the sexy and the OpenSea and Rarible and all these platforms. But in the end, it's not the same.
Nah, it's not. It's not. And it is, for what it's worth, it took a while for that to happen. It happened quick in a hurry, crypto and the idea of like OpenSea and the exchanges that exist. But that's also, it's all the beginning of what we look at as alt assets. And the people that see around the corners weren't necessarily the big banks in this situation, which is the difference to me. It's like 5 years ago, you know, Jamie Dimon saying Bitcoin's a fraud and threatening to fire anybody who traded it. You know, 2 years later, they were trading cryptocurrencies and building their own stuff on the Ethereum platform and had a whole new back office. And, you know, that's something that it moves quick when it starts to move, but it takes a long time for it to enter the zeitgeist and be a real thing. Collectibles, though, without question, whether it's digital or physical, is a right now. And it just opened up to the masses where it feels like it's on that rocket ship that's about to take off. And this is not investment advice at all, nothing to do with the investment side of it. But it's prevalent in everybody's portfolio one way or another, whether you want it to be or not now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well said. None of the show's investment advice other than you should listen and do your own thing. Yeah, like so it's hard when you're that early. And by that early, we're not talking decade, but like 3-4 years of grind. Does it feel better now? Do you feel it?
It's a weird thing where it's like we know how much work there is to do. And when you're inside of it, you don't realize how much time you put in. I see it on my face a little bit, like look in the mirror, you realize some time has passed. Mm-hmm. But that being said, if you believe that the future is in this sort of democratized finance, whether that's digital or physical, you believe there'll be an ecosystem of services to support this new sort of system of spending and investing money, it feels really good to be in a place where we have a little bit of name recognition to have those conversations in a really fast way to get things moving now, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame that democratized finance has become bastardized. And maybe it should be because it's just too generic. It's really just everybody's been onboarded. Bonds have been at zero long. You know, it may go negative. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But like odds are they go up. I mean, I don't know. The trend is, okay, they go negative. I don't even know what that means. But really all what's happening is you got some platforms that onboarded hundreds of millions of people and now they want to play. But playing in this is they want to trade. They want to get their account to up and to the right. So they'll try anything.
Yeah.
So how do you guys internally, how do you as a culture person, because I consider you a marketing culture person, what is the future here? Like, you know, I know Gary Vee's a smart guy. I'm not a disciple of his. I don't listen to his podcast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's dead on, or at least I've gotten some takes. And I know him well enough to know that he's been around the hoop on this stuff forever. But it's like, I don't know how he keeps up the energy, but it's like culture meets community meets monetization meets all this. Where are we at?
And this, to me, like, there's two pieces. I think that physical and digital will be complementary for a long time to come. I think it's hard right now to go pure. Everything is an NFT and everything is tokenized and everything is on the blockchain. just because I think you still need that link for regular people, which is 99.9% of the world, to go through a payment process with fiat cash and not get lost in the complexities of an ERC-20 token versus an ERC-721 token and the benefits that go with it. So there's an element of intimidation that still exists for a massive portion of the population. So I think the lanes that exist right now are the ones that we're exploring actively. So putting a CryptoPunk on Rally and doing any NFTs fractionalized on Rally is because everybody knows kind of what a CryptoPunk is right now. The method of putting it into a portfolio and really trading it is completely foreign to 99% of the public. And we know it because you know OpenSea and we know Rarible. We know the exchange is built on top of all this right now. But the idea of like what Rally does, which is that all-encompassing kind of a little bit investment bank, a little bit of a platform for marketplace, a little bit of a marketing platform, a little bit of media. You need all that because the education is missing. So we jumped, in my mind, with everything that's happening right now from the pure kind of 401k investing and like the general put a few shares of Apple in my portfolio all the way to like this pure risk on, just throw money at something and not understand the educational component of it. The middle is what's being built right now. I think that's what we want to focus on right now too, is the idea that you can onboard somebody a little bit slower than having to run to the new NFT drop to try and make that alpha ASAP. Doing it in a more productive way, bringing people in, educating them on what alternative assets actually are, and then building that ecosystem around it with baby steps is what I think is going to be very, very prevalent this year into 2022. Because it moves too quick right now. For anyone to make money and to get in on like an NFT drop right now requires a lot of inside information kind of
and
to
time.
Get access and massive amounts of time to research it and to understand that process and to set up wallets and be in early and put the right bid in and make sure you're not getting killed on gas. Like everything is really complex to a regular person. So like my dad knows that there was a Jerry Garcia NFT drop and he's been a huge Grateful Dead fan and it was all his art that was done as like these fractal images. It's really, really cool stuff. But getting in requires like a couple of phone calls because it is a way more complex process than just opening a MetaMask wallet and buying the NFT. As long as that exists, it's going to be very, very hard to get the masses to commit to a purely digital portfolio. So for Rally, the opportunity is really educating, showing people things that they recognize and understand, putting the charts in a place where it's really easy to follow it up and to the right, and then making that transaction happen the same way a debit card transaction would. That's the piece that I feel like makes all this whole ecosystem work. But then it becomes that world. Like if you truly believe that everything will be digital in the future, and I do believe that we'll have these physical relics and they'll always be valuable. But if you believe that we will go to, you know, an Ethereum-based world in some capacity, then the ecosystem of services to support that, you know, new or complementary future is a new AWS and a new Shopify and a new Webflow and a new everything that we use to create. The exchanges are there right now and the wallets are there right now. But that's the front end. And to me, that's like the very tip of the iceberg where we're going to see all these brand new services built specifically for that digital future.
Yeah, I've never seen something where there is so new and so much FOMO. We are like a second old. And I just see
I've never seen this before.
I think maybe because Twitter and Discord, they're so real time. Everybody's like, I had 20 minutes delayed. Like I always keep saying the same thing. We had nothing to get excited about. It was 20 minutes delayed.
It's not a Bloomberg machine anymore. You know what I mean? Like you're not in front of a machine trying to figure out.
If you have a Bloomberg machine, all Bloomberg machine tells you is that you have a shit job. Yeah, it pays for your Bloomberg, but it's a shit job. Now, if you're a free person, you have Coifin, you might have stolen your Bloomberg password. You got Discord, StockTwits, Rally. You know what I mean? Like, you just see every day people leaving a bank on Twitter go, what? This existed? Huh?
But that's what you have. Like Twitter is that periscope inside the submarine. Like it's the look up and see around that turn where the news is real time. So if you want to know what's happening in the world of NFTs, like it all takes a Discord and Twitter and that's it. And you'll get as much information as an investment bank would. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I like tell people like, hey, it's too fast for you. Just go to StockTwits. You won't hear about NFTs yet, but you still make a lot of money trend following around crypto. Yeah. And, you know, Reddit's living in the future. And if you want to live in the future, 99% of it will mean you fall off a cliff like Coyote. Like you'll be running and then you go, what? Huh? Mm-hmm. And then Zappo down and Acme Grain Co. And then Twitter is real time. So you really can, as much as you want to put in, get like pretty good alpha. Mm-hmm. But you don't need it. You really don't. And then there's StockTwits, which is a little bit more curated. Exactly. And you and I talk about it too with .c's for collectibles. Like everything will have a ticker.
Yeah, but dude, you say it too. Like, I steal this from you, and I tell every time I'm asked, like every interview I've ever done, I bring this up, is that there's no noise. It's all filter failure. And part of that is knowing you're not going to be able to pay attention to everything. Yeah. So if you're on StockTwits and your lane is crypto and you have your watch list with your three or four, you know, streams that you can follow and go, you have the ability to go really deep on that one thing and make a well-informed decision with the same amount of information that the people who trade it professionally, like you're pretty close if you focus on that one thing and follow those individual streams to getting enough information to start your thesis in a way that's very, very productive. If you listen to everything, you're trying to find every new NFT that drops and jumping on everything before earnings, it's impossible. It makes you crazy. You stay up all night. You make bad decisions. There's just too much going on. You got to filter out the bullshit that you don't want to pay attention to and focus on the good stuff. And that's it.
That may be why I have the rash.
But everything's possible.
May not be the sun. It just may be worrying about missing everything. May not be the sun. It just may be worrying about missing everything. I mean, this is peak FOMO for people. I'm having the time of my life. I don't know what the time of my life even means, but the time of my life being, my kids are gone. All right, maybe no wonder I'm having the time of my life. But I have no FOMO. Gary, Tom, and I are like, we've made our bets. There's a million other bets to come. You know,
that's Zen. You've reached a state of enlightenment that I have not yet.
Well, you can't. You and I talk about this all the time. You shouldn't stress about it because it'll keep you great. And I think culture, like I talk about fasciology and you get this whole thing. Like, I just think the ultimate is fasciology and reading that the LVMH guy is the richest guy in the world, give or take, you know, yeah. Jeff Bezos, is one of the most fascinating data points. It's the most fascinating data point to me about investing and what's happening in the future. It's like Amazon, these guys better figure out fashion. Apple's figured it out, and that's why they're $2.5 trillion. But if they really want to win, they need to LVMH.
Yeah, you were right about that. You were right. I read that a couple of days ago from you, and that's no one's really been thinking about that. And 10 years ago, that would have been a partnership that would make absolutely no sense.
Oh my God, what LVMH can do with drops.
Nah, kill it. And also
they're going to be the brand that kills it because their audience is sophisticated and has the time and the computer and the coaching to really appreciate tokenizing part of the experience of this crazy expensive stuff they buy.
That's the
further differentiating itself even from the physical. So LVMH could come up with two lines, like the line that you only get the physical and the line that you truly get the physical and the digital piece.
It is scary, though. I'm panicky a little bit. I'll tell you why. This is the one thing when I was with our new VP of product, Andy. We're walking in Soho yesterday, and this is something that's been prevalent, and I see it way more now. I don't have a concern with the way that kids are investing. I'm using kids liberally, but the way anyone under 40 is investing right now, the way they're spending discretionary, and the fact that like everything is accessible in a certain way right now, you know, inflation's X percent and that represents the increase in like the price of the things you need, like the gas, milk, lumber type stuff you could throw in there. But then there's like the want inflation, the price of things that you kind of want but don't need. And that's when we walk in New York and we're walking around yesterday, everybody, this is a new phenomenon, has on like a $50,000 watch. And these are people that are, they're regular people in the street.
I'm in that business. So yes. No, really? In Soho?
Never,
yeah, watches are the new Porsche. Yeah. Watches and NFTs are the new Porsche, for sure.
But it's people that it looks like they're spending everything they have on a watch. It's kids that I know and I see in the street. I know how much money they make and they're wearing, you know, a $80,000 Audemars. It doesn't make sense to me. And it's just easy to get it right now. And that's whether it's an Afterpay situation or it's just like I'll spend a lot of my money on this right now knowing I'm going to get it back later. It's a weird phenomenon where it's this thing that the things that have appeal to a broad group are on the fringe of accessible for people who make a little bit of money. And then the discretionary spending with the assumption that it's going to be worth more in the future. It's almost like a discretionary investment in bad stuff. And that's something that's weird to me.
Depends on the brand. So here's what I agree and disagree. I agree mostly. I disagree as a watch guy. Not that I saw this coming, but my non-investing sister's new husband, great guy. He runs sales at ADT, the alarm company. And he goes, dude, you know, and he always talks to me about investing and he never pulls the trigger. I mean, he's a successful guy. And he's like, all his money's in swamp land and cash. Because there's money in swamps. what he said to me is like, dude, all my 26-year-old employees have Rolex. This is a bubble. And I said, no, you know, you're put on your, you know, he just doesn't think like an investor. And I immediately chased down a watch investment. You know, we had invested in a company that that didn't work too fast. But we're at Justin from Watchbox on my show, and we're going to invest there. And it's like, no, that's a store of value for them for the moment. They don't think they're going to get killed. If you buy a Rolex and you do it right, you're not going to get killed. And you get to wear it.
Yeah.
And you may get laid. I mean, no girl cares about your car because they don't see you in a car.
You're not wrong. And I said it wrong because I do the same thing.
No, you agree with this. I'm just saying, like, yeah, these kids are spending, but they're not spending on at Best Buy where the thing dropped 99% when you walked out of the store. Your fucking CD-ROMs, your TV stand, your speaker set, everything you bought at Best Buy at my age, Knut and I, went to zero. Yeah. And it was at 1% when you walked out. There was no place to exchange it. It was worthless. True. You bought a $4,000 TV. You walked out. You had no one to sell to. It was worth $500.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. These kids walk out with a Rolex, and they may actually make money.
Nah, this is it. You're describing exactly. This is the issue. I agree with you, and I do the same thing. And the watches I have are, to me, I'm not going to lose money on it. And the watches on Rally are handpicked, and it's a very specific subset. And this sounds completely disconnected from reality and elitist, and I'm not trying to make it like that. But you go into any like Rolex authorized dealer right now, and the racks are empty. And I'm talking about like whatever's left is like the throwaway Datejust, and someone's buying those because it's all that's available right now. It's nuts. But that to me is like now what you have access to when you see kids buy. I'm using kids again as a crazy way to say it, but kids buying these wild biotechs that have no balance sheet and you know it's going to zero, but there's a chance to make some money quick, or bad NFT projects that have absolutely no real world value at all and no rarity, and it's going to go to zero. Because you said it before too, everybody sees everything as a potential 20x or 50x, and the most you could lose is 1x. So you're seeing some weird decisions.
Yeah. The world of Afterpay may change all this, but I don't know what people are going to buy with Afterpay. Urban Outfitters uses Afterpay. Like, who puts a skirt on fucking layaway?
Everyone.
No.
Everyone does. That's
okay. But I'm saying they're not putting an $8,000 flat screen on it because kids have an, they'll say, fuck that. I'll just use my iPad, or I'll borrow an iPad from my dad.
Or they'll get a Best Buy credit card with no percent interest for 18 months and just max it out anyway and say, all right, this is the game of the TV.
I used to have to pay like 72% hidden interest on my Best Buy. I hate that.
Yeah, I did too. It's a different world, man. It's 2021. Everything's, all the money's free. You didn't know?
Yeah. So in that world, and in a world where my son has no debt, whereas even though I was well-educated, I had high debt, not school debt so much, but like credit card debt and living room debt, like get my living room working so I may be able to bring a girl home and snare them in my, what do you call it? They snare them in my web. Now it's a digital web. I had to snare them in a physical web. So I've lost my train of thought. But in that world where Max can fucking say, I need $8 for Venmo, that's such liberate. I mean, that stress of Knut and I filling, here's Capital One, $9.92 minimum cent check, right? So I don't pay interest, right? Whereas my kids, like, Venmo me $6, so I'm even Steven. And there's just a lot less stress, and they feel like they are going to be alive forever, and they have no debt. And so, yeah, they look at everything as, like, make me money. Because they don't feel don't have to make the $700 Capital One payment that was just interest.
Man, I wish when I was Max's age, I thought like that, because it changed the narrative and the way that people think.
Well, it's not. You couldn't have thought like that because Venmo didn't exist.
Didn't exist. That's true, though, too.
And Tinder didn't exist, and iPad didn't exist, and Netflix didn't exist, and YouTube didn't exist.
Yeah, but you back then, and you know this, I got out of school in 2006, I'm starting my actual career. You were asking how much, not is it available? Like the question now is, do you have it? And then the question on price comes after, because there's so many ways to turn that price to zero or affordable anyway. That didn't exist back then. So it's like the American dream of owning a home. I was trying to buy an apartment for the first time. I had enough money for a 5% interest only loan as a down payment. Like I was trying my best to get an apartment, when in reality, I should have thrown all that money into Apple and waited 5 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The opportunity didn't exist for fractional. It didn't exist for Afterpay type stuff. It didn't exist to sort of rent before owning and have it be looked at as an okay decision to make. None of that existed. Now, it's only like, oh, I can have that right now. You have it? All right, I'll figure out the way to pay for it later. That never existed before.
I think that's the good point. If we had had these same choices, maybe we would have made these same decisions. You know what I mean? And I think the big unintended consequence is, what does this mean for the true economy? There's two economies. I mean, housing seems fine. Kids are buying houses because it makes sense to mm-hmm. them, but they're not buying anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame them. Everything that to them is like, okay, it needs to last me 4 wears and then I'll throw it out because, you know, I don't need something to last 10 years. You know, I watch Rachel shop and I watch Max shop. They're, you know, they don't have racks and racks of stuff in their closet. Although Rachel does, because she.
But it's good. That's important. Like, I saw Rachel came into the office, I don't want to put her on blast, like a week and a half ago, and she had these jeans that were like bleached and it kind of looked like the print of a cow. And like, I was in my head, I was like, those are some really cool jeans. Like, I never saw you wear something like that before. She's like, yo, no, I want that. I could tell that was her outfit for the day. That was her statement piece for the day. Huh. You get access to the statement pieces now. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants to stand out, but also wants to be like comfortable in their own skin. You have more opportunity to do that now than you ever have, whether it's a watch or an investment or a pair of clothes or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
which is very exciting.
And brands are fragile. I mean, I'm going to say this about like one of my favorite brands, and it was always Lulu, and I just kind of gave up on it because it just feels like everybody has it. I think it'll be around forever. But Rachel took me shopping and I bought this aloe. I think it's a hot. She goes, well, I go, what is this? It looks like a nice store. She goes, yeah, it's more expensive Lulu. I go, well, that's a genius marketing model. Offer less SKUs and double the price. And I was like, they won me. They won me over, right? As long as it fits well and like smells expensive and someone is nice to me in the store, they got a new fan. So, I bought a couple of things. And Rachel was stressed out. She goes, I can't believe you're buying this stuff. And I'm like, honey, this is why I work hard. I don't want to go with the riffraff at Lulu.
That's it. With those normies.
Follow me up.
Normies over at Lulu.
Yeah. So I'm a brand guy. Like, you know, I get to make very few choices about, you know, what I'm associated with or how I feel. And it's so funny because I'm a watch guy and I've like been talking about this Resence watch, which I don't even pronounce it right. But I just love this. It's a work of art. And then I see that Hodinkee's doing a drop, and I'm like, well, that just cheapened your I'm like, wait a minute, did you not do your work, Resence? Like, you're supposed to fucking pick the right partner for this drop, right? You don't need fucking schmo downs with man buns. this is supposed to be like an ultra curated brand, and now it's on Hodinkee. And I'm like, so there's landmines out there. It's not just like it's complicated to stay relevant.
It's tough, man. That's all noise, too. It is so hard to, everything is so consolidated to stay relevant for more than like as a brand who focuses purely on aspirational goals and just image. It's like in 5 years is like a lifetime now. It's crazy. Everything is way too quick for that.
If I was at that company, I would say, if I was CEO of that company, I'd say, fire the Hodinkee dude.
Yeah.
Right. We just spent 8 years building our brand for like a guy that that would be pissed if they saw my watch on Hodinkee. You know, and I'm like, who makes that mistake?
It's hard not to, though. You see it in Soho, especially. So like the two or three of the coolest brands in New York are within like an earshot of us. And one is Amélie Lyon d'Or is around the block from us, which is like arguably the biggest streetwear brand right now. And the one that you want to be associated with.
What's it called?
A cafe. That's awesome. Amélie Lyon d'Or. So it's ALD. We'll go for it. AIME.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the place where everybody congregates and hangs out. And all super nice kids, super, super smart creatives. But also, like, there's a clock ticking once your brand gets cool because it's so easy for that to switch. And if you rely on cool, you're going to mess it up. They don't. But what's happened is that, like, their cafe side has been invaded by TikTok. So now, like, young kids go there to buy their coffee, the specific type of cappuccino that they
can't
make,
afford
and put it on
stuff.
TikTok. And you can't, it's just like, it's a dangerous game to be stuck playing because you have no control over the way that your brand's going to get. Once your brand hits that critical mass, you have no control over where it goes from there. And that's when it gets real dicey.
Yeah, I bought some sandals that Sunday, Saturday walk or whatever. It's cool. Little
cafe. Saturdays. Yeah.
And people like comment on my sandals. Ooh, Howard, you're moving up. I'm like, they're fucking commenting on my sandals. I'll take a picture of my feet and someone go, ooh, you should get your nails cut. I'm like, you're looking too close. This is a joke. But everything's, you can wreck your brand over the dumbest thing. And I was like, but like, I was offended. Like, I bought the sandals because they were comfortable. I didn't know it was like a fancy brand and they weren't that expensive. And everybody's commenting on my sandals, which has made me insecure. I just thought I was buying a nice pair of non-flip-flop sandals.
Yeah.
You have great taste and you didn't even know it.
I don't even think it's great taste. Now I'm uncomfortable wearing them. I'm like, I don't want people to notice my sandals. I wear sandals for comfort.
Yeah. You're allowed to be fickle like that, that you're allowed to pick and choose. Like that's the big thing. That was never a thing. You're allowed to pick and choose. The fact that you said Lululemon, like jumped
Correct.
The shark is wild to me. That's wild.
Isn't
to
it
me
wild?
It's like,
and I'm wrong.
That means
it's still
you're all
great.
In. You're all in on that.
No, I'm all in on, this is why I'm like, it's hard to own, like Nike has managed to do it for so long. That's just, I just don't understand. That's fascinating. So has Lulu without CEOs. It's still great, but I don't think their stuff fits me in a way that, like, as much as I like the brand, it needs to fit me better. So I'm shopping for...
You're entitled.
I'm entitled. Like, I gotta...
You're entitled to do it. You're entitled to do it in a good way. In a good way.
Yeah, I don't need my knucklehead nephews wearing the same shit as me. They're earning 80 grand a year.
And therein is what we do at Rally. That's why I like so much of what we do in terms of finding the assets that we find and listening to community is about building something that we know is, you know, 20 years, 30 years. If you go for the trend right now and you just jump all into it, your shelf life becomes way, way different.
That shit will be worth zero in the aftermarket. So how did you decide on CryptoPunk? And like, well, this is cool. You know, I think Lazaro is like culturally there. You know, I'm not cool. I guess it's you and Lazaro, maybe Rob Siegel. But like even Rob and I are now 55 and like just we tapped out. So we're just like we joke about just how old we're.
Yeah, but cool enough to get away with it, you know.
I know, but we're cool at being uncool. We're cool at like, okay, Larry David's cool. Let's try and be like Larry David. Like I read a quote on Larry David. I mean, I don't understand how fucking funny this guy is. I come home, Ellen's got a book on her thing. I only read the covers of books, and it's like a punchable face. It's the guy from Saturday Night Live who replaced Seth, whatever. I kind of recognize his face. And I think the book's called Punchable Face. And Larry David wrote an intro saying, you know, I always thought I wanted to punch this guy in the face. Then I got to know him, and now all I want to do is kick him in the balls. And I'm like, that is fucking gold.
And, yeah, that's good. Though. That's good.
Right?
I got my life too.
And the world that we live in right now, I give up. So, and I rely on Rally and my kids and you, like just stuff around me to kind of percolate to the top. Like I had not heard of Allo. Or maybe I had seen it a few times, but then walking the mall with Rachel, she didn't know she was being used last weekend. Just walking with her, I don't recognize anything in the mom. I was like, this is cool.
She was a seeing eye dog for Howard.
Yeah, she was a seeing eye dog. And she was like, felt bad for Ellen because I was spending money. I go, Rachel, don't worry, we can afford aloe pants. And so in a world like that, how do you decide when's the time? What made CryptoPunk the thing that you're going to try? And tell me about what it is and how it would work.
Yeah, so for anyone who's on the outside looking at it, it's the equivalent of kind of like this Nintendo style sort of, you know, pixel art version portrait of these 10,000 unique characters. No one is the same. They all have their own rarity, but so it really is.
There's 10,000 characters, and who decided that? Jesus.
Yeah. So that was by the development team, by Larva Labs, who built it. Oh. So Larva Labs has Meebits, which is their new version, which is like an avatar 3D style, you know, another set of characters that have their own rarity, and then CryptoPunks, which was the early one. So the earliest NFTs, this is like going back to 2016, 2017, CryptoPunks were the equivalent of like the rookie card, the what people look at as the rookie card, I should say, for NFTs. Mm. And there were some earlier ones, and there's Curio cards.
There was
and,
the frog thing that Fred, like that frog thing I never got.
Yeah, there's some, the rare Pepes and like the that are meme based. There's all that exists, but the line in the sand was drawn with CryptoPunks. And those are without question right now. We think about value. We think about momentum. We think about upward trajectory.
And they're funny. They're light. They're cute. It's cool.
It's relatable. They're all very relatable in some capacity. So right now, as we talk, the floor on the cheapest CryptoPunk right now is around $150,000
for one of the 10,000. This
for any of for the cheapest of the 10,000.
Now, can this? And you have this. Sorry, going to go back with this.
Fucking
Larva Labs. Are they getting a piece of every time it's sold? Were they smart enough to figure that shit out?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically transferred for free. So like no one really paid for any of these. But the big benefit of NFTs and for the creator and the artist is that you can attach that kind of ongoing royalty so that every time it sells, you get a piece, which is a very unique part of a lot of these contracts for some of the real creators who are creating art from the ground up and selling it as NFTs. Mm. But for us, we don't want to, there's never a no-brainer, but we had our eyes on specific CryptoPunks for a while. It got to a point that it solidified itself as an asset class. You're seeing people get involved that I think you wouldn't have seen get involved even 3 or 4 months ago. And they kind of live outside the hype, which is an important part of it too. They're at the forefront, in my mind, of this whole new kind of digital art revolution. And to me, when we think about, you know, the heirloom pieces, you think about, you know, the Stella Rolexes from, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. When you think about the Mickey Mantle rookie card, this to me is the NFT that will represent the future should NFTs fulfill the promise that they're talking about fulfilling right now, or that people feel like is coming.
And who made that decision? You or?
I was collectively, but our like Fitz and Brian Herbert and like our acquisition team here is always like staying ahead and seeing around those corners, but they look at it from a data back perspective as well. And that's what we always look at first. And then it becomes a conversation here. And then, you know, something like when we first acquired that CryptoPunk, everybody here was already starting to buy NFTs. And now it's like, you know, the entire company right now has like a Meebit and a Voxhound, like a crypto dog, and like all everybody now has gotten so into it.
Yeah.
And we see it now as that cultural shift along with the investment worthiness of that NFT. Once those two things hit, then it becomes like, all right, it's time to put it on Rally. And that's we're in that moment right now, no question.
So you bought it, it goes up on the site, and how does that work then?
So now we'll open that initial offering and we'll probably do it in such a way that allows a lot of people to get involved. So we might, you know, we want to make a new on-ramp. We want people to understand how this works. To do that, we need as many people as possible in this initial offering. So at $71,000, we'll probably let, you know, everybody get a meaningful amount, but we won't let any one person buy like a huge chunk of it just to have their CryptoPunk. We want everybody to have access to this as a new on-ramp into NFTs. And then we'll follow up. I mean, we have, you know, three or four more in the pipeline right now in terms of other NFT projects and other CryptoPunks. And it's something that to say where that will be in 15 or 20 years is a little bit harder to gauge than it would that Mickey Mantle rookie card. But again, like we'd rather be early to that party than late to that party. We'd rather do something that people really, really care about and also make it a little bit easier for them to understand what NFTs are and what they could represent. And doing that by allowing them to make that purchase the same way they would buy stock is an important part of that.
No, it's like Robinhood gave 319,000 people access to their IPO. You could give 300,000 people access to this and then let Howie Lindzen come in with his Carl Icahn button and buy everybody out and everybody learns, which is kind of what's been happening for you. A lot of people are just fucking coming over the top.
Nah, we just set a record. We just sold the most expensive video game of all time, a $2 million Mario Brothers game, which when we acquired that, we bought that for $140,000. We did the initial offering at $150,000 about 2.5 months later.
Right.
And now a year later, when everyone was looking at it like that was an insane price to pay, at $150,000 to sell for $2 million in less than a year and do that in a very real way where it's a real buyer. We poll all the individual shareholders. Everybody's like,
how many shareholders did you make 10 times their money on there? How many?
Around a little over 500.
In how long a time?
In 11 months.
Oh, that's just so exciting. Rachel told me to short that, so I'm in a little bit of trouble. I got to get rid of my house.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll talk about that.
So
that's what we're trying to do is like create those moments. So, and that's what's happening more often now.
Yeah, that's a eureka moment. You can't put that back in the box. I think the curation part is important. It's not as sexy as scalable, but you're doing your job as I would want to do, even at Robinhood or what you guys are doing, is like be responsible, like be in the middle. There's okay, like 50% of Wells Fargo people still get their bank statements in the mail. So the NFT's never going to get to them.
NFT ain't getting to them.
You know what I mean? For all the people with FOMO, just remember Wells Fargo is like basically at all-time highs and sending their customers paper monthly statements. That's how fucked the world is right now. You know what I mean? Everybody's talking about vaccine. I'm like, hello, 50% of people get their bank statements in the mail. Of course, 50% of the people aren't getting their vaccine. 50% of the people don't know what mail is.
I don't want to lie to you. I get my TD statements in the mail because I refuse to. I, out of principle, will not pay a dollar a month to get emailed to me. I refuse to do it. I'm making TD send me that and I recycle it.
I gotta guess go get paper. All right.
Yeah.
Go cut down the tree. These organizations are just so poorly run. Anyways.
But how long do you think it sticks around for? How long do you think? Because to me, it's still a necessary evil. And for what it's worth, like, I have a good branch of my bank. When I have to go do a wire or deal with them, it sucks sometimes. But also, it's still so early in that when you're buying an NFT right now, you might spend 70, 80 bucks on an NFT and pay 40, 50 bucks in gas right now just to get that transaction through. So I don't know how the switch could happen in my lifetime. I hope it does, but who's to say?
Yeah, in my lifetime, I wouldn't make that bet based on what I've seen. I'd almost say it's going the other way. But all I know is how I'm living. Mm-hmm. My kids are on Venmo. They have their Chime or current account or whatever their account is. They have their Morgan Stanley account that I can look in and help them with, but they can do their own stuff. And Howard Lindzen has not been inside a bank. I had to go once, and it was an ugly experience, and they wished they never had me there. So it's on them. They were the upset part that I had to come in. So if I can, with my thousands, have no bank, everybody can. Sorry, I refuse to believe that if you have $100, you have to have a bank, or if you have $10 million, you have to have it, or $100 million, you have to bank. You do not need a bank, and you do not need physical statements. Like, if I, the ADD, OCD person, can live without paper, I think it's quite liberating, and I think companies need to do their job and figure this stuff out. But whatever, it's your money. Absolutely, if that's the way they give you an offer and that makes you feel comfortable, why increase your own anxiety? So for sure, you know, and that's probably why banks will be around forever.
Yeah.
Just people like you, like the long tail is still pretty long. No, it's not. It's, you know,
it's true.
The long tail's a long fucking tail.
I mean, oh, you know what, though, to bring it full circle, like, I just went to TD Bank, you know, 8 days ago and sent a wire for a watch, and I had a very pleasant experience with the guy at that bank, and that's like a full circle moment for the entire episode. Everything we talked about.
Yeah, but he went home and cried. He goes, "You know, one idiot came in today, honey, and I was watching season 13 of The Office for the 14th time, and I was having a good day, and I was, you know, cutting my nails, and some fucking Soho prick who has more money than God walked in and made me do a wire for him." So basically, that was the two of your days. You had a good experience, and that guy killed himself.
Yeah, he smiled, but I know that there was no.
Oh, he went home and cut it. He's a cutter. He went home and cut himself. And you came home and thought you had a great day. So there you go. Oh, man. That would be a
you're
show.
Not wrong. I guess you're not wrong.
I don't know if I'm wrong. I'm just saying, I'm so happy that my kids are doing something that I didn't do. You know, one's living in New York, one's living in Vegas, one's, you know, on the path, like, you know, already working, one's like tried work and is going back to, you know what I mean? Like, there is no path, you know? I had one choice. Knut probably had one. We had different choices. Our parents expected a certain thing, and you came to the high road, and your parents were going to make that call whether they liked you or hated you based on where you went to school and what profession you had. And there was there was very few choices. So the fact that these kids have choices, it's not their fault. And therefore, if they have choices, then they should make some choices and they'll learn.
Man, you're not wrong. I was Max and Rachel. Like, I didn't, you know, there were times I wanted to drop out of school. But in my mind, I was thinking, like, I was the first person in my family to graduate. I'm not going to mess it up. You know what I mean? And when I get out, I got to go figure out how to get a job and maybe buy a house or an apartment one day. That having that dynamic be so dramatically different and so much more accepted now is something that this new generation has that we didn't. That's super exciting to watch, because they're all, most of them are at least taking advantage of it in such a way that really builds a future. And it's not, kids aren't just sitting around doing nothing now. Everybody's
really
doing
aren't.
Something.
They just really aren't. And I think that's what pisses me off most about COVID is our elders treated them like bums, and they were willing to go do stuff. They needed some direction. Otherwise, they were going to stay on their iPads. We had a great chance to get these kids to do shit. And yeah, parents need to do it too. And we can, you know, we take some responsibility for that. But hey, turn on the TV. The president says, go fucking help old people. Like, no one did anything. You know what I mean? It was just bad advice everywhere. We wasted a lot of time.
A waste of time, no question.
So people can come by the store too. You're in Soho, right? People are, oh, you're not open yet. The store's not open because of COVID.
Nah, we're actually moving to a bigger space. So we'll be in a much, much bigger, much more robust and kind of expansive space very soon.
Oh, that I didn't know. So, like actually moving?
Yeah, I think so. So I don't know when this is going to happen. I can't say specifics, but probably.
In Soho still?
A little bit north, but still within Soho, yeah.
Ooh, exciting. So a store and office still?
Yeah, everything. And like a place that looks and feels like Rally. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's a little more room to move around.
All right, well, I'm adding you to look at, you know, I'd work for Robinhood, I'd work for Angelus, and I guess I'd work for Rally. Fuck Rachel, she can move to another job. Pick another company. So, you wouldn't get work done if I was there.
Nah, there's always a spot
there'd
for you.
There'd be coffee, and trend spotting. There'd be trend spotting at that Greek coffee place. There'd be a lot of eating and a lot of coffee and a lot of Tide Pen. A lot of Tide Pen.
That just sounds like a good day. That's a good day.
So you know, people come in the store, they can go on the app. There's a million ways to get involved in investing. And how many people now at Rally?
I think it's around 33 total, all in. I mean, that's the thing too. Like, we're always hiring, but this is one of those situations where it's still like we have a lot of runway and we have a lot of great people around us and it's got a big enough name and enough users. Like we're still a company that really is heads down and caring about what we build, every single feature, every single acquisition. It's really a team effort still, you know?
Yeah. And so people can go to the Apple Store, get the app.
Yeah. So search Rally Road in the App Store or rallyrd.com or I think we're Rally on like all social handles now too.
And what's the minimum account?
$1 if you want. I mean, we have assets that are live that are always like, it's always around 10 bucks for something that's open and available, but we've really, it's no minimums, no commission. So we're always trying to make sure it's approachable for any price point. And that's a big part of educating people on what these new alternative assets is not making it a $10,000 minimum like a lot of people do, you know?
All right, my man, this was fun. Not fully on topic, but I just wanted to catch up around culture and everything. And New York, you feeling good?
Nah, man, it's like, it feels, dude, I mean, that's another sign of discretionary spending. If you want a reservation anywhere, it's 5 p.m. or 11 p.m., even on like a Wednesday. You just, it's crazy. And there's like a champagne shortage. I don't know what's happening right now, but it does feel like there's a lot of energy around. The parts that were a little bit desolate are starting to come back a little bit now. Even Midtown has like, you know, you're seeing the guys in suits walking around a little bit. Like there's some energy back, even the good and the bad energy all at the same time, but a lot more people.
All right. All right. Stay safe. And I'm excited to hear about the potential new store, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Great talking, always.
See you, bub.
Later.
Hey.
All right.
That was fun.
That was fun.
It's like talking to an old friend.
Always enjoy
well,
him.
He knows his topic so well.
Oh, yeah.
We don't even get to, it just comes out of him like John Street with finance. Or Don with trading, or right. You know, somebody around investing. Like, he oozes understanding of cultural phenomenons.
This guy gets it.
Yeah, I don't know. Completely. You can learn it. Rachel did a purse. She learned everything about Birkenbeck. So I'm saying, this stuff can be learned.
Right.
Doesn't mean you'll be able to be great at it. It just oozes out of his skin. He walks the talk. He lives inside. You know what I mean? You have to live amongst the beasts, you know, as I've learned in the trading lore. You have to live there to learn the lingo and to really understand it. All right. This is Panic with Friends. Howard, that was Rob Petrozzo from Rally. And you're listening to my weekly podcast. You can subscribe, Google, Spotify, Apple, your favorite app, and search my name, Howard Lindzen. We talk to investors, founders, entrepreneurs, traders, try and stay one step ahead. That's really the trick, people. Don't need to be months and months and years ahead. Sometimes you just got to be right there when stuff starts really happening. And we will see you every Thursday, new episode. Subscribe, get it, and talk to everybody soon.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.